Hey friends, welcome back to the Work Your Wealth podcast, the show where we're teaching you how to make smarter choices with your money. I'm your host, Mary Beth Storjahan, certified financial planner and founder of Workable Wealth. Today on the show, we have Beth Grulich as a guest. She is a CDFA, a CFP, a financial advisor, and partner at Abacus Wealth Partners. Beth is a wealth of knowledge and loves helping women with their finances. Beth, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mary Beth. I'm very excited to be on this morning.
I'm excited to have you here. So one of the topics that comes up a lot with our clients and yours, I'm sure, is the idea of college planning and education planning for our children and how to best go about it and at what point in time to start with it. What do you see as the main concern that people have when it comes to funding education for their children?
That's a great question. There's actually a lot of them, but I think it's so stressful. And the reason this is a passion of mine is I've been through this three times. I have launched three children into successful college graduates, and it wasn't easy ever, not with any of the three. I think that it's terrifying because, number one, you have this little bitty precious being that you raised, and now they're trying to spread their wings and turn into an adult. So you have that part, and then you do have the financial burden. For most people, they're going to spend more on their children's college education than anything else except for their home. It is a major capital expenditure. And so it is stressful, but there's ways to reduce the stress if you go by a process that I work with my clients on.
So where do we begin then? I agree. I think it's stressful. The amount of money, when you think about it, is astronomical in some cases. So what kind of process are we talking about?
So the first thing I'd say that clients tend to do improperly is they don't start early enough. And when I say early, it's not about the pressure and the academics. It's about learning your child and what may be best for them. I suggest that in the sixth grade, anytime families are traveling, that they start to explore campuses. You know, if you're on vacation or you're visiting family somewhere else in the country, just hop on a college campus. You'll get a sense, and your child will learn to become more interested in what feels right to them. Do they want a large campus with a lot of team spirit, or does that make them feel insecure? Do they need that nurturing feeling of a small private school? And so the more campuses that you literally step on, the more they're going to figure out a lot about themselves.
So sixth grade is when you basically start the conversation about college and kind of showing them what it is and what it looks like and feels like, or are we talking about
conversation?
About
I mean,
then?
Usually as soon as they can read and go to school, you start talking about the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is you go to college and perhaps graduate school, and mom and dad are really working hard to save money for you. But I think that most parents do that. If your dream from the time this baby's born is that they go to college, you've talked about that. And they know in many cases, not all, but many cases, parents have gone to college too. Or if they haven't, it's a dream they have for their children to be able to have that credential, because it does open many doors. There's no question. When done right, it opens up so many doors, and net worth will be better. The statistics are absolutely undeniable. Your child will be more financially secure if they can finish the right degree for them.
So then in sixth grade, we're exploring campuses. And then are you saying that then by knowing what kind of campus your child is leaning to, you can kind of start to get an idea for what the long-term cost might be?
Exactly. Yep. Cost and what the child needs to do to prepare themselves to be the strongest applicant for that type of school. You know, the larger schools, it's really more like GPA and test scores. There's not a whole lot of handpicking and digging very deeply. But the smaller schools, they care about what is different about you and how could you contribute to our campus and make it a little bit more special. The other thing that I think a lot of parents don't do as well as I'd like to see them do is be open about finances. I've had several clients that came to me after the fact, and you know, they'd had these dreams for little Billy or Brianna, and they get in the school of the dreams, and then there's no money for it. And it's harder than ever now because of the enormous amount of college debt. The federal government is not advancing the same amount of funds that they used to. So it used to be that a child pretty much could figure out a loan in order to pay for any college, but then they had to deal with the debt down the road. But that's not even true now. The burden falls on the parents, and that's another mistake. It's so important to communicate carefully so that you don't put your own retirement future in peril.
What point in time do you start communicating? Or preparing for the cost of college. So we're talking, you said sixth grade is when you start visiting the campuses and you're having the conversation from as early as a child can read. But what point in time should somebody start thinking about the financial cost?
When my younger clients get pregnant, I suggest we open a 529 because you can start funding at a baby shower. If you register for baby gifts and the list is filled, you can always have a 529. They won't be a beneficiary yet because you don't have a social security yet because the little being has not come out. But it's never too early to start a 529. And if you have friends that really just, you know, want to make a small contribution into it, those small contributions end up turning into large funding amounts 18 years later. So it's never too early to start. And the 529 provides you the tax advantage of all the funds grow tax-free. And as long as they come out for a qualified expense, there are no taxes due. It's a beautiful way to save.
So if I'm pregnant and I'm starting a 529 at my baby shower, what does that look like to open it? Can you walk through what those steps are and how somebody would change the beneficiary?
It's very easy. If they're working with a planner, the planner can help them do it. They can make themselves the beneficiary until the baby's born. And then depending upon the actual custodian, the company where the 529 is held, most of them make it so easy that literally all they need to do is either have a link in the registration or email anyone interested in contributing a link that they click on and fund it directly.
Love that. And then after the baby is born, it gets updated just with a simple form?
Yeah, with that social security number. Exactly. And they also can be transferred to other children down the road or back to yourself. So there's specific rules regarding whom the account can be transferred to with no tax implications, but they're quite large. They can go to nieces and nephews and many other family members.
I love that. And so you can start basically as soon as you get pregnant. And how do you make that a financial priority? Where does it fall in the ranking of all of the other things that people are working towards in their lives?
Great question. It's such a personal, it just depends family by family. Most important to me with a client is you're living within your means, number one. Number two, you're funding your dreams on a regular basis. And for many, that might be home ownership. Then when the family comes along, you want to fund college to some level, perhaps, hopefully. But if you work with a financial advisor, they can help you figure out based on your dreams and goals and the capacity of your financial situation, whether you can start funding towards a public university or private. Many times there's values involved. I have clients who are very wealthy who say, you know, I want my child to have to fund themselves for 1 year. And perhaps if they do a phenomenal job, then I'll forgive that loan. But I want them to have some skin in the game. So it's a very personal decision. It's a values question, really.
I completely agree. Where does it typically fall in terms of saving for one's own retirement and preparing for that and then college funding? Do you follow the same mindset of just values, or are you typically saying, I like to see clients at least maxing out retirement this way first and then doing 529? Or do you really purely base it on the client's values?
No, definitely retirement first. You don't get a do-over chance on retirement. There will come a period of time where everyone no longer is earning a regular income. Most everyone, not everyone, but most everyone would like to know when there's a work optional phase of their life. So it's imperative that you start funding that as aggressively as you can first. I recommend that before we even start saving for a down payment. Retirement is always something that needs to be done unless we're experiencing a temporary reduction in pay. But otherwise, that is top of mind for my clients.
Thank you for saying that, because I think that's one of the biggest things is that no matter what somebody's level of wealth, I feel like there's a struggle sometimes to put their own safety vest on first, to put their own oxygen mask on. And so when college comes around or education funding, I do find that clients are excited to start there before they've reached this other point of checking off their own future first.
You're absolutely right. 100%. And the child, you know, even though loans are harder to come by, even if it is a parent loan and the child is then going to pay the parent back, that child has decades and decades to do that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, normally when the parents are of the age where they start thinking about seeing the retirement lifestyle when those children are going off to college. So there's not that much time to make up for the time that you've lost if you haven't allocated your priorities carefully, making sure that you ensure your own security first.
Thanks for that. And so let's talk about some of the harder conversations and you alluded to before. So in talking about the financial paying for college and what the options Are there ways that you're finding that clients or students are getting creative these days when it comes to funding college education? Or are they opting to do education differently by community and then going to 4-year? What are you seeing? Mm-hmm.
There's so many options. For sure, in most states, there's the option of doing a community college and then continuing on to what's often a very competitive school that you perhaps couldn't have gotten into as a senior in high school. But there's other ways. What parents forget is that it's so important to work with their college counselor carefully, because that college counselor knows your child, and they know the schools, and they'll know, you usually look at your fallback schools. Those are the colleges where there's an excellent, almost guaranteed chance that your child will be accepted. Then there's what they call the 50-50 schools, like probably, but nothing's ever definite. And then there are the reach schools. And for most everyone, there will never be financial merit aid for a reach school, because they can only go around so much. And so that rarely happens, unless you're perhaps a first generation college student, because those reach schools, the really highly selective schools, love that. But if you went to college and you're looking at colleges for your children, those reach schools are probably not going to offer financial aid. However, parents get caught up in status and name brand schools. And what's most important is that they realize, and this is why I like them to start looking at schools starting early on, because if it's the right fit for your child and they can really thrive and excel, they could get in graduate school anywhere. They could get any sort of job. Everyone gets caught up on those high status Ivy League or nearly Ivy League schools. They're so hard to get into. And if your child's not a superstar there, they're not going to do as well as they would at a second tier, less competitive school, where they may also be offered a lot of aid. A lot of financial aid. So that's normally, the financial aid comes in at the 50-50 schools and almost always at the fallback schools. You know, they will want them so badly that they may say, "You come for free. We really want you here. We want you part of our student body." And it does not mean your child will be less successful in the long run at all.
Do you think, and I love that you said that, because that was actually a question I was going to ask, was the brand names and the status of the school and the name of it. Do you think that just the school or just the grade point average upon graduation, do you think that that transfers into the student's successful career? Or do you think there's also a component of, you know, did the person work or build a career or intern during college? Is it also about the experience they have during that 4 years, or what transfers most?
Oh, definitely. No, you're right. And so for the larger schools, because they don't have time to look at details, often GPA is just extremely important, and you can't even be considered without a certain GPA. But aside from that, schools want to see people that work hard. You know, many of my favorite athletic coaches have always said, I'd rather have the harder worker than the gifted athlete. And it's the same way with schools. They really want to see someone. And that's why the most selective schools love first generation students. They love to bring in someone who didn't have the advantages of an upper middle or an upper class upbringing, that didn't have the tutors to make sure the SATs and ACT scores were as high as they could be. They want self-starters. And so that sort of thing is extraordinarily important, not to all schools. And that's why, you know, you apply, you cast a wide net is the way I like to describe it. Even though it is expensive to apply to schools, you can often ask that they waive the application fee, but applying to a lot is important, because you don't know exactly which schools will look at your application and say, wow, this is who we want. I see this young adult is not perfect yet, but they're going to be. And with our molding and our direction, they're going to turn into someone really special.
So 18, 19-year-olds, right? We're asking them to select colleges and to select careers upon entering the university. Mm-hmm. Do you think that really matters in the long run of careers? Are you finding how much of a plan do these students need to have on the front end and actually execute on it? Is there a lot of pivoting in the path once they actually get into the university and see options, or does somebody need to be committed to that path?
Great question. I don't know about you, Mary Beth. I had no idea. I just didn't know. I know I love to work hard. I knew I was willing to work hard, but I had no idea what I wanted to do. So that most, virtually all young adults will pivot. Very few know. And even some who are determined they want to be a lawyer find out, oh, I hate being a lawyer, you know, so they really don't know. So the most important thing is that they go to an institution, whether it's community college followed by a four-year or whether they started a four-year school, and they're successful and they thrive. You can get out with a degree in philosophy. And if you did extremely well and you were very active and you were well-rounded and you led organizations at school, they're going to look at you. You may be hired by a consulting firm over someone who majored in business and was mediocre. You know, it's really about thriving and growing and maturing and making a difference in the world more than the actual major for most careers. And often we're seeing more and more graduate programs that become so important now. And they could be online. They're not as expensive always, but more and more we're seeing specific degrees. But you know, no one needs to worry about that at 18. They just need to make sure they're broadening their horizons and they're excelling in everything they choose to do and explore.
I completely agree. I had an idea, and then I changed my mind three or four times once I got there.
So, okay. I'm still evolving.
Yes, exactly. And so as a parent of somebody, and you're mentoring them, you're coaching them, or trying to guide them through this path to college. So there's a sixth grade experience. Do you encourage basically visiting college campuses straight through? And also, when do we start the conversation with students, also with our children, about the money available to them? Do you let them know early on? Are you pushing scholarships Absolutely. And aid? What's the appropriate age for those conversations?
I think all of us, most of us, are more private than we should or need to be with our children about money. And I think it's extremely important. And it doesn't mean you don't love them. I think often parents equate money with love, you know, and it has nothing to do with love. And communicating honestly shows more love than pretending that you have this big fund available for them to go to school when you don't. And so I think that, you know, sixth graders understand, and the reality is kids understand more than you think they do anyway. They know when families are hurting financially. They know when families are, I know my parents were very honest about how fortunate I was that I was going to be able to go wherever I wanted because they'd saved very hard early on and they never wanted me to forget that. And I didn't. And I still don't. I feel so grateful I was able to not have to graduate with debt because that is so unusual. But if you don't have enough funds, which 98% of parents don't today, then you just communicate it and you explain that you're doing all you can. And, you know, this is what we think could work. And like I said, when you cast a wide enough net, often parents think that they couldn't afford a private school. But if you cast that net properly, the private school may end up being less expensive than a large public university.
Interesting. Going back to the savings options and preparing. So what are options if my child is 16 years old approaching college and I know I don't have enough saved for them to be able to afford the college of their choice, or I mean, even just a standard 4-year? How do we begin to piece that together? Is it just student loans? What should I be looking at?
So there's several different tranches of available debt. So the best are the federal loans because they are fair. Some are fixed, some are adjustable, but you're really not going to get terribly abused. There's a safe confine in those. Now, when you go to private loans, they can be much scarier. So it's so important. And this is where it's always worth every dollar if you can get some professional to just look over your options if you're not savvy about debt, because the fine print is really fine. And it's imperative that you know exactly what the loan will look like when the schooling is over. The reason we've reached such high levels of debt nationally now is so many students had no idea what they were signing. They didn't realize because they're subsidized and unsubsidized loan. A subsidized loan, the interest doesn't start accruing until you graduate. And most loans are not that way. Most are unsubsidized. And it means the moment the money goes into your account to pay your tuition, there is interest that is growing on that debt. And so you might think that you have $100,000 the day you graduate, but that's turned into $120,000. And so it's so important that you understand exactly what the debt will look like. But right now, what I'm seeing with my clients is that kids aren't getting more than $6,000-ish in their own name that they're allowed to take on as debt. And any other debt that comes on after that usually has to, the parents co-sign and actually own the debt. And it's called a direct plus. It's a parent loan. And they're federal, but they can't be forgiven. You know, there's certain ways as a student that you could have debt forgiven by going into public service for 10 years. And, you know, right. This is changing and evolving a lot every year. So I hate to say that what exists now will exist in the future. But it's just important to look at all the avenues that may be available at that point in time.
That's interesting. So 6K, are you saying per semester or quarter?
No, per year. Per year.
Wow.
So that would be 3K per, yeah.
Wow.
We're not seeing much because there's such a fear of default, which right now there are actually Social Security wages that are being garnished because there's student debt that's still outstanding on some adults who are obviously in well into their 60s and 70s liability, which is just sad.
It is sad. And I want to go back to just what you mentioned about being aware of what these loans look like when schooling is over. And I think that's where, as parents, doing your children the service of either hiring a professional or having the conversation with them yourself about, okay, this is how much college will cost. This is what the loans would be. And what are your salary options upon graduation? What does the career that you're currently looking at, what does that pay? And at least having a candid conversation around, okay, if you're going to budget this much and live with roommates or whatnot, how much can you actually afford?
You're absolutely right. Absolutely. And schools owe this. It makes me so mad because schools really do owe this to their students. And they are starting to publish more and more numbers. Like, our average graduate is making this much money upon graduation. And just like they used to do with master's programs. I mean, it used to be schools would say, oh, you know, 60% of our students get into law school upon graduation, or X percent get into medical school. And they used to be published numbers, but very small minority of students continue on to be a lawyer or a doctor. Most of them are just getting out and they want to be able to afford an apartment and a car lease or payment. And so it's so important to go into this process as an empowered citizen and an empowered applicant. And as the kids get older, so we talked about the timelines of 6th, 7th, 8th grade, you're just walking around the campuses, seeing what feels right to your child. Then as they enter high school, it's more about, okay, what courses do you need? If this is your dream, then you need to have a certain number of AP credits. And even if that isn't your dream, AP credits are phenomenal. For any child who can handle the rigor of that curriculum, you can often find yourself ready to graduate in 3 years instead of four,
right,
if enough AP credits are accumulated. So that's a free way to save a whole 25% of the college education. But go in. I always like to tell my clients to make sure their children, who are really young adults at this point, are feeling empowered and they're asking the right questions. They're going into these administration offices and they're saying, what could I expect to make? What are the statistics? The other thing I haven't mentioned is when you cast that wide net and the offers come in, very, very often you can negotiate. If you're in school XYZ and Y and Z offered you a much more competitive financial package than X, there's nothing wrong with going to X and saying, you know what? I got in Y and Z and every dollar counts. And they gave me more. What can you do? Very often, they will up their offer. So it's just important that you feel empowered as a family, that it's all about you and what is right for your family, and you're shopping around. You're not just selling yourself, you're shopping.
That is so interesting. I had not considered being able to negotiate the award packages.
Yes.
Interesting.
I see it happen at least half the time.
Wow. Getting some tips for myself here, Beth. That's a financial planning.
It'll be here before you know.
I know. I'm trying to explain to her what college is right now. So one of the things that comes up, and I'm not sure if you have this as well, is what do you say to parents who want to hedge their bets? Because I do have some clients who, of course, the dream and the goal is for their children to go to college. But there's also like the, oh, I'm not sure how this is going to play out. How do you have them plan for that financially? I mean, they could be well suited to fully fund a 529 plan, but they're actually just not sure that their child will end up attending the 4-year college. Mm-hmm. How do you navigate situations like that?
Great question. If the 529 takes anything away from the quality of family life and security of future financial status of a family, then you don't want to oversave into it, for sure. Because yes, they're a great tax savings device, but you don't want to have the inflexibility of finding this overfunded 529 if the child either doesn't go to college or wants to go to community college. So I usually tell clients for whom there isn't a money tree in the backyard, which is 99.99% of them, to fund the 529 at about half. Your goal to be about half of what you think you'll need. And then you can fund it with other sources. You can get loans, because we don't want to overfund it. As you'd said, retirement comes first. Making sure that you're living the life you want to live, that's important. It's not just about saving for the ultimate college dream, because none of us know our children. And I have 3 children, and all 3 are so different from one another. and you can't force them. And the older they get, the more you realize you can't force them to be what they don't want to be.
Right.
And there's no point in throwing them in college if they're not ready. There's nothing worse. I think we all went to college with the partier who really didn't care about learning. They just wanted to have a good time for a lot of money. And so it's just important that each child is taken as an individual and you look at them year by year. But yes, you're right. You don't want to overfund a 529 if you have one of those children. Because here in LA, we have a lot that are very creative.
Right.
And they can go on and they could be a wardrobe designer for a major studio and they can make more money than a miserable attorney for sure by following their passion. And they don't need a 4-year degree. They may need, you know, just a 2-year certification. So each child is unique. Start early saving because you can save a whole lot less that'll fund a lot more in the future. Each year is different. Take care of yourself first, your own retirement first, and they know you love them and they will be fine.
Yes.
With your guidance.
Yeah. And that's one of the things I recommend to clients is typically doing goal of funding about half to the 529 and then half the other half that you would have available to save to a taxable account that could fund a future business
startup. And
then
you have the freedom to do anything.
Exactly. Absolutely. So you have that money flexible, assuming that it's available in your cash flow to do so.
Exactly.
And so let's talk about if you do have a surplus in your 529, what's the problem with that? Or what are the options available to you when you do have a surplus? How do you navigate that?
So if the last child is launched and they went off because they got a full ride because they were world's most gifted scholar, it depends upon, so you could look at your whole family, like do you have nieces or nephews that might need help? Do you want to go back and improve your own human capital? Because you could transfer it back to yourself. You can save it for future generations. You know, it could go to your grandchildren. So there are a lot of places that it can go for sure. But more often than not, my clients are scrambling, wish there was a little bit more.
Yeah.
So that's why it's important to start early.
Yeah, great.
Most of us are scrambling.
Exactly. And with starting early, somebody just doing $25, every little bit counts. What do you?
Absolutely. Every little bit counts. Every little bit. That's why I'd rather see $25 a month starting early than figuring out, my child's 12. What do I do now? Because then you're in a crucial period of your own life where you really need to make sure that you're on track for some sort of work optional phase of life and that you're protected, that nothing that you've worked so hard to build is vulnerable in any way.
Love that. Is there anything else you think that people should know about college funding or options available to them or considerations?
No, just try to embrace the experience and find the light at the end of the tunnel. Like I said, it is stressful for everyone. It was stressful for me with each child, but at the same time, it's really a bonding experience. It's precious. It's a rite of passage, and try to find the glimmer of beauty in it as opposed to the pain.
The pain of the paperwork, you mean? The paperwork and the
all of it. The application process, the emotional, the financial. There's just so many areas where it really is fingernails on the chalkboard, but it really can be a beautiful experience when all is said and done. Try to look at the positive as much as possible. And the earlier you start, the easier that is.
Yes, I agree. And thank you so much for providing some of these creative ways and options to think about things. I think there's a lot of steps we can take now. And even if we aren't able to fully fund and loans do happen, one of the things I've always said is, you know, you could pay from your other resources, your existing cash flow at the time of attending college. You can help to pay off loans on the other end as well. So there are ways to get creative beyond age 18 to 22 as well.
Absolutely.
Okay, Beth, let's take some time to pivot to our wrap-up questions. What would you say is the best financial advice you've ever received?
The best financial advice I ever received was from my parents, and their advice was max out your retirement account, or at least as much as you possibly can. Never carry credit card debt. And you'll end up okay. You'll live within your means. It was all about, we all seem to spend to the level of our income. But if we save and max out from the beginning and never see it or feel it, then before you know it, you're growing your retirement savings as long as you don't ever carry that credit card balance. And whatever your life looks like, you're living within your means. And it's so gratifying to avoid that stress of not living within your means. It resonates with me all the time, and I try to help my clients do the same, because the things don't truly make us happy. Feeling empowered financially does.
Completely agree. I was actually just talking to my husband, Brian, about this yesterday. We were talking about what it looks like to live within our means, and yes, could we push ourselves in other areas to have more material things? Yes, but what would that mean? And what kind of comfort would that really give us in the long run? So I think that's wonderful advice. What would you say is the worst money advice you've ever received?
Oh, my father told me that I always had to have my car serviced at a dealer. Don't trust anyone else.
Oh.
And I think I was about 30 and I realized, oh my gosh, an oil change doesn't need to be $105. You can get it for $19.99. And that I think of all the money I wasted because I had to go to the dealer because the dealer was honest. And I actually feel that many dealers are not honest at all. And then if you can find an independent mechanic that you trust, that will save you enormous headache, heartache, and financial pain. So that was not great financial advice, but I loved him nonetheless in many ways, but that was not the best advice.
Beth, I think that might be my favorite advice. I don't know if you just like hit home because my dad also is so passionate about finding a trusted local mechanic and has been going to the same mechanic for years. I mean, since I grew up, but
aww,
I completely agree. I think that, I mean, yeah, but I agree. Same thing. If we go to the dealership, it's, I mean, gosh, like, quadruple the amount.
It's obscene. I mean, even a tire, the same tire costs three times the amount.
Exactly.
The same tire.
Like, go to Costco and get your tires.
Exactly.
Okay. What would you say is your favorite money mistake you've made?
Oh, gosh. Well, I wasn't the only one that made this. And I tell clients this story a lot. It was the .com. So I've lived through a lot. And during the .com, like in the 2000s, I had friends that were like millionaires on paper, because they bought, you know, all these companies. And I'm sure some of your listeners weren't even alive then, but there were things like pets.com and all these .com companies that had never made a penny, but their stock prices were skyrocketing. And so everyone I knew had $1 million on paper. And I had to get in. And I knew in my gut it wasn't the right thing to do, but I was missing out. And I was just so upset, like all these people have all this money and I don't. So I remember calling. And at the time I had an advisor at Schwab and I called and I said, you know, I have to get into this segment. And they said, we really don't recommend it. You are buying at what we perceive to be the top of the market. I don't care. I have to get in this segment. And fortunately, it wasn't really critical capital. It was
your gambling money.
Yes, it was. Although no one likes to lose money, but yes, it wasn't going to make us lose the house or to have to get rid of our 529 accounts. But anyway, it was just so stupid. And a professional told me you shouldn't do this, but I had to have it. And of course, it ended up, I lost about 70% of what I put in. And so it was a great lesson because I learned that no, you can't time the market. You're not smarter than the market. You just don't even think you are because you're not.
That's great. And then finally, what does being wealthy mean to you?
Wow. Right now, during this period of COVID-19, with so many things that we cannot control, it reminds me that to me, to have a lack of fear around all things financial is just a dream come true because that's what being wealthy is to me. And it doesn't mean you have to have a certain number of zeros in your net worth. You just have to have enough so that it removes the fear around all things financial. Because I realize right now there's a lot of things to fear, things I had never feared before. And so because I'd saved hard and my husband and I worked really hard to live with our means, despite the wails from the children who wanted to go to Hawaii every spring break and all the things that they were denied, that's what wealth is to me, just a lack of fear. And right now, more than ever, I am grateful for that because there's plenty to keep me up at night.
What a wonderful description. Lack of fear. I think that hits home for so many. Thank you for sharing. Okay, Beth, tell our listeners how they can contact you.
Well, Beth@abacuswealth.com. And I thoroughly enjoy changing lives. I wake up every day and I'm so grateful to have the career that I have because it's just, I love people and I love helping them and the two come together and I would be happy to help anyone who needs some direction in any way, but particularly college planning. I love that because I want to prevent others from making the mistakes I made.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Beth. And I'll be sure to link to your email and the Abacus website in the show notes. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Mary Beth. What a pleasure. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. If you're ready to start making smarter choices with your money, head over to www.workyourwealthbook.com to grab a copy of Work Your Wealth and learn the exact financial planning tips I walk through with my clients.